So what I'd like to talk about this morning is in particular related to the issue that you just talked about, but specifically to review with you the recent report that was released on public health financing by the Institute of Medicine. And you're doubly lucky today, particularly lucky because Glenn was also on this committee. So if there are questions, I'm going to just turf the really difficult ones to him. And it is related to the introduction because, in fact, at the end of the day, financing is what we need to get our job done. And I think historically, talking about financing, particularly to the public, has been one of our most difficult challenges. This presentation focuses on the part of the framing argument that is, in some ways, the most important, which is what is it that we are trying to make happen? And then there will be a second stage of how do we translate what it is that needs to happen into messages that resonate with the public. As background, RWJ, about two and a half years ago, financed the Institute of Medicine to produce three reports on public health. The first one was on measurement of public health, the second one was on law and public health, and the third and final report, and the one I'm going to be talking about with you today, was on financing in public health. So what I'd like to do in the time that's available is to work with you to go through the report and highlight some of the key recommendations, and because we have a little bit of time, maybe give a little bit of background more than I had been anticipating on the committee's thinking. But basically, as in any IOM report, it's a series of recommendations at the end of the day that come out of that report. And oftentimes, that series of recommendations reads like a menu and it's sort of a little bit difficult to get through. And so I want us to divide the report for you this morning into these four pieces and work through the four parts with you. Because basically, what the report did was first talk about setting goals for where we want to go. The second thing was to, independent of the funding that's in the system, to recognize that our financing system per se is profoundly broken and to talk about ways to fix it. Then to say before we can ask for more money, we actually need to make sure that we're using our existing funding as efficiently and effectively as possible, and how can we do that? And then finally, what are the strategies and methods for advocating for more resources? So that's the outline of the talk and the recommendations. And I'd like to just work through those with you. So many of you have probably seen either this slide or a slide like it before. This is a slide, if you are sitting in the back of the room, that shows life expectancy in years on the y-axis. And along the bottom is per capita health spending. And all those little dots represent countries, in this case, the world's developed countries. And as you can see, there's a really nice, highly significant logarithmic curve that shows the relationship between those two, with one extraordinarily glaring exception that if you hadn't seen it yet, it's on the far right, sort of part way down, and that's this country, the United States of America. And the sad truth is that we as a country, as you all know, spend more than twice as much as any other country in the world at delivering health care. And yet, despite that investment, we are sort of at the bottom of the pack relative to most measures of health, including life expectancy. Yeah, so we fall well behind countries like Bosnia and Jordan that spend far less money than we do on the delivery of healthcare. And in my mind, this is not the way to show the public necessarily, but this slide and the information that it contains is a very damning slide. And this is, in essence, the compelling reason why we need to be doing things differently in this country. Our system, our financing system for healthcare is profoundly broken because we spend more than anybody else, and yet despite that expenditure, we're not producing health with all those dollars. So the first recommendation from the committee was basically to say, let's acknowledge that fact. Let's get it out in front of our policymakers, and let's get it out in front of the public, not just as a fact of the current reality, but as a way to galvanize attention, momentum, and financing for where we need to go. And specifically to recommend that somebody, our best guess was it should be the Secretary of Health and Human Services, should actually set national goals for this country on both life expectancy and per capita health expenditure so we can correct that dysfunction that we saw in that last slide, such that by 2030 we should bring the United States to the average level of health in developing countries and developed countries in this world. Thought a lot about this, and you know, this is kind of a wimpy goal, right? I mean, you know, we're giving ourselves a generation to get to average. On the other hand, when you look at how far behind we are and what's realistic, the reality is that the committee also felt that this goal might not even be attainable. So this was a balance between setting something that was a stretch goal, but at the same time, hopefully one that would galvanize U.S. attention and public health and healthcare attention on this problem. So that's number one, is identify the nature of the problem and set us on a path and set us on some goals to try to correct it. The second bucket of recommendations in the report related to the fact that the reasons behind why that first slide is as it is because our health and public health financing system is profoundly broken, as I said. The system, how we do it, how we've constructed it, has fundamental, potentially fatal flaws. And unless and until we identify and correct those flaws, we're never going to be able to achieve those goals. And this was a real challenge for the committee because actually there are a fairly large number of ways that our financing system is broken. And so the struggle was to say, what are the small number of those ways that we want to highlight? And so we picked three and made three recommendations about three ways in which our system is broken that needs correcting. And so I'd like to walk through those three issues with you. The first is almost embarrassing. And as somebody who's worked in public health for about 30 years now, it was very difficult in this committee to sit there and to recognize that, you know, if you're going out and you're asking for financing from a policymaker or from a public, the very logical first question is the question on this slide. So how much are you spending now? And the sad truth is we have no idea. And individual health departments and individual institutions, there are budgets where you can say how much they are spending, but there is no way currently to nationally aggregate those into numbers where at a national level we can say how much we are spending. Organizations like NACHO and ASTO have done a valiant job in trying to combine funding across sources and produce national estimates, and we talked extensively with those folks in our committee and quickly realized that as you begin to dive down into the information, there are huge inconsistencies, and they are the first to say that this is the best they can do. The problem, fundamentally, is that as public health institutions, we don't have any uniform way of describing our expenditures such that you can combine those numbers across localities, across states, and combine them with the federal government. We do not know how much we spend as a nation on public health. And unless and until we fix that, it's going to be pretty hard to get very far in talking with the public or policymakers about more financing. And so the first recommendation in this bucket of the system is broken from the committee was basically to say, fix that problem. The accounting term for a way of combining dollars across institutions is a chart of accounts. And that basically means agreement on a standardized way of doing your accounting such that when you count numbers one way, you can combine that with others because you've agreed on a common set of definitions. And so a critical first need in our public health system, and this is an internal fix, it's almost inside baseball, but we need to fix this before we go to the public, is to say that we need to get that group of technical experts from HHS, from public health departments, ASTO, NACHO, Public Health Accreditation Board, NASBO, to get together and agree on what that model chart of accounts is so that we can track expenditures across our institutions and provide a message to policymakers and the public that's a true, accurate message. So that's the number one fix for the way that our system is broken. Two more I want to talk with you about. Second one is illustrated on this slide, and this slide shows the amount of money that is spent annually in this country on medical research, on the left in blue, and the amount that's shown on, spent on public health research on the right in red. And just to link back to the last talk, notice that the amount on public health clearly says estimated, because in fact we don't know how much money we actually spend on public health, but the truth is that the amount of money that we spend on public health research is a pittance of what we spend on medical research in this country. And the second logical issue that policymakers and the public are going to have with us if we say we need more public health financing is to say, well, how do you know what you're doing is actually working? What is your evidence for whether the programs you have in place are the best ones to actually improve public health? What's your data for that? And despite the fact that there are many excellent public health researchers in this country, the reality, as you all know, is that for much of what we do historically and much of what we need to do in the future to confront our emerging challenges, we're flying by the seat of our pants, because the scientific information about what works and what doesn't work in public health is inadequate, and it's inadequate in large part because we as a country do not finance that research enterprise that we need to generate this information. Again, the system is profoundly broken. This needs to be fixed. And so the second recommendation from the IOM committee in this fix the broken system sort of framework is as follows, is that we need to have Congress direct HHS to develop that public health research infrastructure, and also to develop that prioritized public health research agenda so that we know and can determine issues around comparative effectiveness, impact of what we do, and critically, the return on investment that the public is getting for dollars that they are investing in public health. The third way the system is broken in some ways is, to me, among the most important, not to say that these first two are not important, but it's basically to recognize that for better or worse, and actually it's for worse, we have a system of financing public health in this country that is the worst of two worlds. The first, as you all know, is that public health in general is financed categorically in silos, as is shown on this picture, so that we have money that is allocated by policymakers, not for public health, but for very discrete public health projects that go to states and localities with specific strings attached, such that that money can be spent only for the specific purpose for which it's been allocated. And often that purpose is very severely constricted to meet the specific policymaker who is advocating for it, their needs. So we have compartmentalized, siloed funding. And second, we do not have a majority stakeholder in public health financing responsibility in this country. And so most localities, mine included, has a mix of local, state, federal, philanthropic fee financing. But particularly when you talk about at the governmental level, there is no entity, local, state, or federal, who is stepping up and saying, this is actually my responsibility to finance. Instead, we have a diffusion of responsibility such that each level of government is choosing only to finance the specific categorical projects that are the ones that their policymakers happen to find important, rather than looking at the whole. And there's no discussion back and forth around who's financing what. And so this leads to, as you all know, horrible problems. Number one, there's no advocacy, there's no financing for that critical foundation on which all of these programs need to rest. Everybody is thinking, oh, somebody else must be funding that. Secondly, there's not necessarily any coherence between the dollars that are coming to a jurisdiction and what the problems in that community are, because the dollars have been determined at another level to fund a specific activity, sort of independent of the level of community need. Third, we have much of this money that's flowing in a competitive fashion, where you buy for that financing from the state or federal level. And as a consequence, the competent get more competent, the rich get richer. And those places in our country where public health is most in need are actually the most poorly financed because of this. And finally, because there's no coherence, when budget times are tough, as they are now, these programs are among the easiest programs to cut because they're perceived as being funded in isolation. And so the truth of the matter is that we actually do not fund a public health system in this country. We don't even fund public health departments in this country. Instead, our financing system is for essentially random, time-limited public health projects that public health departments are asked to execute. So I hope I've outlined the problem significantly enough. It's a big problem. How do we go about fixing that? And I think the committee said we in public health need to take the lead in fixing it. If we just sit back, there's no reason why the system is going to change on its own. And so first and foremost, we need to come up with a construct for explaining this problem and explaining the finance that we need. And we need to take a very difficult step, particularly for our culture in public health, and get together and talk about, okay, what is the minimum package of public health service that we expect should be available to every resident in this country? And unless and until we define that, this system of financing is never going to change. The IOM committee felt like probably we need to think about that minimum package in two ways. First, as shown on this slide at the bottom, there are a set of cross-cutting foundational capabilities that need to be present in any health department in order for that health department to work, in order for those categorical programs to have a base of competence on which to rest, including, just as examples, information systems, the ability to do health planning and assessment, the ability to create partnerships in your community, the ability to advocate and identify policy and get it through your political system, the ability to communicate with the public, with policymakers, with others, to do research evaluation, to be prepared and to competently respond to emergency. And all of these capabilities, importantly, need to be cross-cutting. So you cannot, at the end of the day, rely on categorical monies in one of these programs to fund these capabilities, because if that money goes away, you've lost it for the department as a whole. And if you're only allowed to use that money for that one specific issue, even if you're excellent because you have a lot of money in, let's say, communicable disease to do communication, you can't translate that communication capability to your other programs, you're not doing that job. So defining these foundational minimum capabilities, and then second, on top of that, defining what are the essential program elements that you need to be able to have in a health department to deliver services. And let me say, this is not the same as the three core functions or the 10 essential services. Those ways of thinking about public health are critical, but actually they were designed more to categorize everything that you could do in public health. And so there's really nothing that I could conceive of that I would want to do in my health department that I could not squeeze someplace into one of those 10 essential services. This is not that. This has to be about prioritization. This has to be about the minimum set of services that everyone in the system needs to have in order for the system to work everywhere. Everyone needs to have it in order for the system, to work anywhere. And as a consequence, this really is a minimum level of package. It's not what we would want in our health departments necessarily. It's what I would want to have in health departments around my health department, recognizing that there are additional services that need to sit on this. But prioritization in such a way that it can be costed and the price tag associated with this minimum package is one that is achievable is key here. And so the last recommendation in this set of the system is broken is that, and we chose the National Prevention Council, which is the council that was created by the ACA, and hopefully in half an hour from now will still be in existence, that the law will not have been thrown out. But somebody needs to convene again an expert panel to develop and cost this minimum package of public health services, those foundational and programmatic services that are needed to protect and promote the public's health and need to be present everywhere and available to every resident in this country. We all need to agree and endorse this across all levels of government, and governments then need to get together to fund it. I'm going to move on now, getting closer to the end, to the third sort of bucket of recommendations that the committee considered. And it has to do with the fact that before you can really talk about and advocate effectively for more resources, you need to use and prove that the existing resources you have are being used as efficiently and as effectively as possible. And so the committee had two recommendations in this respect. And the first had to do with saying, is there any way in this context of this categorical financing that we get that we can increase the flexibility of that financing while retaining accountability so we can begin to use these funding streams to build and assure those foundational capabilities? And the reality is, yes, the danger in asking for block grants, and so we're not doing that, is that block grants are, you know, directly on the pathway to reducing the financing that's available. But what we do feel can and needs to be done is that Congress, at their level when necessary, HHS at their level, and individual federal agencies think about and ensure better and more accountable use of their financing by designing and implementing flexible funding opportunities that more directly allow for the achievement of state and local population health goals and financing incentives that promote coordination across our system of currently somewhat pathologically independent health departments. CDC, I need to say, has really taken this recommendation already up, and Judy Monroe, I know, is at this conference or has been. We're working with her to say, even in the short term, what can we do with CDC funding to make this happen? And again, we are all concerned that this be done in a way that does not decrease accountability, but really looking for those ways that we can improve our existing financing system to make it more flexible. So second in this category of using funds more effectively has to do with the fact that many of our health departments provide some clinical services to populations in our jurisdiction, oftentimes services to folks who are medically indigent or have difficulty accessing care through the private system. And there is an opportunity, again, hopefully, that we're about to confront in healthcare reform, where health departments should critically look as insurance expansion happens, as Medicaid expansion happens, are there ways now to use this opportunity to increase the capacity to deliver clinical care in the private setting? And are there steps that health departments can be taking today to make that happen more rapidly and more effectively? And so this recommendation is that public health departments should actively and immediately, my words, work with clinical care providers to develop that needed adequate alternative capacity for clinical care outside of health departments that will allow us over the long run to use the existing resources that we have more efficiently if we are not having to use them for indigent care. Lots of issues with this, happy to answer questions at the end, but that's a pretty important concept. And then finally, at the end of the day, even when we do all of these things, the committee concluded that, you know, there is just not enough money in the public health system to get the job done. So we need to do the goal setting, we need to fix the broken system, we need to use our resources more efficiently and more effectively, and even when we do all these things, public health is profoundly underfunded in this country, and that needs to be fixed. It's embarrassing, and the committee confronted that because we don't know how much we're currently spending. It's tough to say exactly how much we are underfunded, and so tried to walk the line there in talking about new financing with the following recommendation. And it is basically saying, you know, we don't know how much we're underfunded, but we know it's a lot, and so let's start off by doubling the amount of money that the federal government puts into the system. And specifically, the recommendation was to enable that delivery of that minimum package of public health services such that all residents in this country are receiving an appropriate level of public health care. Congress should double the federal appropriation for public health and make periodic adjustments as necessary. I'll get to the second bullet in a moment. But one of the things that comes out, it's a little bit of a surprise to me, Glenn is the expert on this, when you actually look at the current information that we have about public health financing in this country, the federal government is a significant minority stakeholder in that. The health departments I've worked in, federal government financing has been actually a fairly large, not majority percentage of all the financing. But across the country, the best guess, and Glenn can correct me, it's around 15%, as I recall, of financing for public health in this country comes from the federal government. So the federal government needs to double that, not to become the majority stakeholder, but to become more of an equal partner. Now, how do you do that? Now, this was probably, in some ways, the most interesting, the most controversial part of the committee work, because there was a lot of discussion about, gee, the instant you identify a source, you mobilize opposition, and so you don't want to do that. And there was another contingent that was, but unless you give some ideas and identify a source, no one's going to pay attention to this. There was also, to be quite honest here, a implicit strategy of what we were calling diminishing astonishment, which is that no matter what you come up with for recommendation as a financing for a public health source, most people are going to say, oh, that's crazy. But you need to say it a couple of times. So hopefully if we start saying it and then others pick up and we continue to say it, over time we'll become accepted. So the second recommendation that you've had a chance to read already, which was this recommendation that says to ensure what we need, which is dedicated, stable, long-term public health financing, Congress should enact a tax on medical services. It used to be when I started in public health that there was a three-letter word in public health you could not use that ended in X. And it wasn't this one, but now these days tax is the word you can't use. We went ahead and said it anyway. So a tax on medical services, a healthcare provision tax, and that HHS should administer and assure coherence of the system by establishing accountability for that new financing, and also to assure that state and local co-financing happens as the feds put in more money. Both Vermont and Maine have provider transaction taxes already. Not a lot of that money goes for public health, but there are models in this country already for this kind of tax. And at the end of the day, this is where the committee came down, although in the report there is a longer list of other alternatives for where this money could come from. And then the last recommendation had to do with specifically thinking about the reality of there's not new money in the system likely in the near future, and that state and local locals in particular need to be thinking about ways of public health financing. And all of us, I think, would say at the end of the day that our public health system is somewhat trapped in the last century because of the lack of financing, such that our emerging challenges in chronic diseases and injury and correcting health disparities are profoundly underfinanced relative to the need. So how can we fix that? And there is an opportunity, again, hopefully one that will continue to exist after 10 o'clock today, which basically says that in many localities, at the state level, and particularly at the local level, there is a fair amount of core money in the public health department budget that is going to provide health care services for the medically indigent. And if and when Medicaid expansion happens, a significant proportion of those patients that we are now providing services to on state and largely local dollars will now have another payer, the federal government. As a consequence, there is about to be potentially a health care reform dividend where, as I say, particularly at the local level, dollars in the public health in the budget are going to be freed up because those patients that we are treating may be seen elsewhere, but even if we continue to see them, we will now be able to bill Medicaid for them. And as a consequence, policymakers are going to have the option of saying, how do I use that money that's been freed up? And the committee came out with this very strong recommendation, which is to say that state and local public health funding currently used to pay for clinical care that becomes reimbursable under the ACA should be reallocated to population-based prevention and health promotion activities conducted by the health department. Keep it in the health department, use it where it needs to go, don't pull it out to fill potholes or solve problems in other agencies. Tough thing to do, but I think that this recommendation for those of us who are advocating for this at the state and local level provides some a bolstering of that recommendation. So I'm finishing up, and just in summary, the IOM committee had a tough problem, tough challenge, because the public health financing system is broken, but at the end of the day, a strong belief that it can be fixed through these four strategies of setting national life expectancy and expenditure targets, by correcting those fundamental flaws, those way the system is broken, by spending our current resources more efficiently and effectively, and by advocating and ultimately getting more resources. Thank you very much. Thank you.